Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, we had a powerful show yesterday when we had a couple of former, praise the Lord, former abortion clinic workers. And we had several points in that conversation where you're kind of dealing with this, I would call it like a cognitive dissonance, where Annette, for example, who's worked at an abortion clinic, a Planned Parenthood clinic, after a few weeks of working in the clinic, what was most upsetting to her was the stupid excuses all these young girls, and I'm just kind of talking about what she was talking about, that she's helping a part of aborting these babies. Yet that wasn't the thing that really upset her. What was really upsetting her was kind of the irresponsible behavior of all these women and girls that were coming in there. And so you get this kind of whole, wow, well, where did we get that? And then the other day we talked about a story with Martina Navratilova, who's the famous, world-famous tennis player, lesbian, and then she came out against transgenders, men who want to claim to be women, then competing against actual women, which I know sounds short-sighted of me, but and then she gets hammered for it. So whether you're talking about transgender issues, gender issues, abortion issues, or even things like socialism, politics in general, and then you come back, and since it's Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist, you come back and you consider that in light of from a philosophical standpoint, your body, your soul, you have matter, spirit. We can put that in there and go, okay, what's the deal? What is a human person? How do we operate? What are we made of? And then how does that affect how we relate and interact with and make decisions about issues like abortion and gender and transgenderism and all that? And so a fascinating conversation, a fascinating way to come at kind of the news of the day and things going on. You could even go so far as to say something about Smollett in Jussie Smollett and what's going on there, that somebody who's not only black but also openly gay then comes up with a whole, just makes this whole story as an actor that he's attacked by a couple of MAGA hat wearing hate-filled people. And I'm like, what drives a person to do that? So it's helpful to understand, well, what is a person in the first place? Dr. Jamie Dew is back in the house. Great to see you as always, my friend. How are you? Welcome back.
I'm doing well. Good to see you. Thanks for having me back.
Congratulations. And because you've got a third PhD,
no,
is that right?
No, it was a second.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. So a second. Well, so tell me about that, because that's the fascinating thing about being out here at Southeastern is most of you guys have just such a love for learning and such a kind of an insatiable curiosity, which is cool. But yeah, what was the deal behind that? What happened?
So a number of things. Number one, it was just really curiosity. I don't play golf. I don't hunt. I don't fish. I don't do those types of things. I like to read nerd books and do stuff like that. And so that was part of it. The other part of it was, a guy like me ought to be writing and researching anyway and publishing and producing that type of stuff. And I just figured, why not do it first towards a degree and then come back later and work towards publishing all those individual pieces. And so it was a way to sort of keep me doing that type of thing. And then I wanted some stronger philosophical roots in general. But then it was the issue, frankly, that we're going to talk about today, human persons, that I just about 2008, as I was finishing up my dissertation here for the PhD I did here at Southeastern, I came to be obsessed with mind-body issues. So what exactly is a human person? I call this philosophical anthropology. A lot of scholars do in the field. So specifically, what is a human? You know, are we a body? Are we a soul? Are we something like that? Those were the types of questions that really drove me.
And this is not a new question.
No. I mean, this goes all the way back. Goodness, all the way at least to Plato. Plato has a very particular view called substance dualism. We'll talk about a little bit today that becomes a dominant view in the West. It is still to this day a dominant view that people hold. And he's sort of talking in contrast to people that we would call materialist, people that think we are just material beings. And then, of course, there's other views that come back with Aristotle immediately following Plato. And those three views, which were alive and well 300-400 years before the time of Christ, really are still the dominant family of views that are available to us today.
And then one of the things that we're going to do is kind of take a leap from that philosophical conversation and the reality of that, and then take it into actual issues.
Right.
Like, yep. Whether it's abortion, gender issues.
Yeah, that's right.
And understanding how do we move from what is a human to why do we do the things that we do.
That's right. This has bearing on everything we say about human people, the way they live their lives, the way they handle moral issues, the way we treat the unborn. This touches everything within our anthropology, our view of man. And so this has a big bearing on that.
And so what are our options when we consider is man?
Yeah. Yeah. So generally speaking, let me differentiate three kinds of views, three families of views, I should say this. And when I call them families, it's not like anyone, like materialists, for example, all believe exactly the same thing. But you'll have various brands of each of these, okay? So first of all, there's something we would call materialism, which says basically there is nothing about us, no spiritual component to us. They don't mean that we're not spiritual in the way we live our lives and we have spiritual feelings and stuff. But what they mean is there isn't a soul, there isn't a body, there isn't anything like that. And you have, goodness, probably 10, 12, 15 different brands of this materialism available to us today. But all of these would deny the existence of an immaterial soul or a spirit or anything like that. And they would say that you and I are simply organic beings. We have bodies and brains, and that's just what we are.
Yeah, we're just stuff.
That's right.
Carl Sagan made a star stuff.
That's right. That's right.
Darwinian evolution. There is no supernatural.
That's right.
There's nothing outside of the material.
That's
world.
Right. And the way you're talking about that even sort of presupposes, and you know, I thought this way as well, it presupposes that it's only the scientists and the philosophers that have thought that way. But actually, materialism has gotten to be quite popular in theological circles as well. So there's this whole brand of something called Christian materialism today where, look, I'm not doubting these folks' Christianity at all, but they think about human persons that we are just material beings at the end of the day.
Yeah,
so materialism is a family of views. Okay, so that's one view. Okay, another dominant view, this is the view of Plato and Descartes and a lot of folks, especially out of the Protestant tradition, less Catholic, much more out of the Protestant tradition, theologically speaking. And this is called substance dualism. Okay, now substance dualism makes two distinct claims about this kind of stuff. The first claim is what I call stuff distinction, and I know that's a real general frame.
Yeah.
But stuff distinction basically just says bodies and souls are different kinds of stuff fundamentally, right? Bodies are material objects or physical objects. They have mass. They have extension. You can poke them. You can pick them up.
Sure.
You can throw them. Souls are spiritual things. They're not physical. And those are two different kinds of stuff. So the substance dualist makes stuff distinction claim. They then make a second claim, which is the bigger claim, and that is what I call person-soul identity, which basically says while there are indeed two kinds of stuff, body and soul, the human person just is one of those, the soul, right? This is, say, like when you go to a funeral and Granny's body lays there. The
right.
preacher says, well, that's not Granny. Granny is up there. Right? And so what he's talking about is something spiritual there when he does that.
Yeah, we're going to pick it up there talking about mind, body, soul, spirit, and how do we really define what a human person is? And then based on that reality, then why do we do the things we do? We'll talk about abortion. We'll talk about gender issues. We'll even talk about socialism. We're here with Dr. Jamie Du. We'll be right back. Because you are more than I could ever dream. This world could ever see. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, where, by the way, it doesn't matter whether you live here in the Raleigh-Wake Forest area of North Carolina. It doesn't even matter if you're a Southern Baptist, if you're serious about following Christ and you just want to get some deeper levels of teaching than normally we would have access to. Southeastern is a great way to do that. There's some things you can do online that are totally free. There's other things that are really reasonable. And then, of course, you can pursue entire degrees online. But there's all kinds of options for you to check out. I would say that the very first thing you should do is go to sebts.edu. That's just Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. So sebts.edu/radio. That's going to land you on a page where you can see all kinds of options that you have to engage the teaching here at Southeastern, which is the largest seminary in the East Coast and one of the preeminent seminaries on the planet. And I would tell you the first thing you should do is take Dr. Danny Aiken's hermeneutics course. That's just – you can do that online. It doesn't cost you anything, and you can do it at your speed, and Danny will teach you how to properly interpret and study the Bible. It really is like a – it's like a golden ticket that all of a sudden unlocks your ability to properly understand and interpret what you're reading. And again, things like this, churches are awesome. I love the local church. That's God's main program on the planet. And there's great Sunday school teachers and all that kind of stuff. But most churches are not populated by seminary professors. So there's a level of depth and teaching that you can access at a seminary that you simply cannot access at most churches. And it, you will be blessed, and it'll just have a remarkable impact on you. So please check that out, sebts.edu/radio. Talking today to my buddy Jamie Dew, Dr. Jamie Dew, Associate Professor of History of Ideas and Philosophy, also the Dean of the College at Southeastern. There's a college at Southeastern, Jamie?
There sure is. It's a fantastic college.
What's up with that?
So the college is the undergraduate program of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. We equip students to give their life for the cause of Christ in the church, among the nations, and in every aspect of society. So in other words, everything we're doing is coming back to serving Jesus. We train students to go work in churches with pastors and youth pastors. We train people to go to the nations, and then we train people to go into the fabric of society and give their life for the cause of Christ there. So it's growing. It's booming. The house system's flourishing. Lots of fun things happening. We're having to build new buildings now and renovate buildings because
cool
we got so many students coming. So praise God for all those things. It's a good time at Southeastern and the college at Southeastern.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember with the college at Southeastern, that's not like that's the only thing that exists to do is feed people into the seminary.
That's right. That's right. Our students go off and they do everything. I mean, our students go into business. They go into education. They go into law. They go from here and even go into nursing and things like that. We've had students go just literally to everywhere and to everything. It's part of our slogan, but I want to be clear, especially as I have an opportunity like this on the radio, we actually do mean this. We're not for everybody, right? I mean, if you're what I want is that student, the guy or the girl, who really and truly wants to give their life for the cause of Christ. And if that's who you are, if that's what you're about, then this is a fantastic place to be. I don't know of anywhere better.
And again, you can come, you get your degree, and you move on. And you can come here to get that biblical base and to get your worldview strong and operational and ready to engage. You can get prepared and then move on from there.
That's
not necessarily that you're going to go to seminary. But we should all be show ourselves approved. We should be approved workmen that are ready to go out there. And I would actually prefer that most Christians in America do not end up in a seminary and do not end up in quote-unquote professional ministry.
Right.
We need to be out there where most of us live,
yeah,
but equipped and ready.
That's right.
And Southeastern has a unique ability to do that. Praise
the
Lord for that. So we're talking about kind of body, soul, matter. Who is the human person? And then we'll turn the corner and talk about on Theology Thursday. How do we then kind of move from that? Because once you understand these things, Jamie, I think it really helps you understand when we look at the world, whether it's abortion or even what's going on in New York and different laws around the country where you sit there and go, how do people not see the insidious nature, the evil, the disgusting reality of abortion right up to the moment of delivery?
Right.
And then they cheer about it, and then they light New York up in pink.
Yes.
And you just go, how do people get there? I mean,
it's
just like the two gals that were on yesterday, praise the Lord, that served in the abortion industry and abortion clinics. One gal, 10 years, 20,000 babies, the death of 20,000 babies, and would say she was saved when she was a little kid.
Yeah.
And then how do we kind of get ourselves into those situations? Now we got the gender issue and all that kind of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
I shared the story the other day about the so-called Lutheran pastor who was collecting purity rings, melting them down and turning them into a golden statue of female genitalia. It's just crazy. But if we understand what a human being is, then we can start find some sense.
Yeah, I mean, so it seems like we got to these places just almost overnight.
Yeah, doesn't it?
When I was a kid, you would have never thought about stuff like this, and then all of a sudden, boom, here we are. But I want to be clear, this is not something that just happened quickly. This has been the inevitable result of a very slowly progressing change of worldview that started in the Enlightenment and comes forward up into today. And really what happens is you've got these standard notions of what human
persons
are.
And the Enlightenment wasn't that long ago.
No,
really,
I mean, you're talking about 250 years ago, roughly, ballpark, is when this stuff is starting to thrive. So, you know, these ideas that are born there that progress and become modern philosophy, modern science, and things like that, ultimately are going to lead us to some very different conclusions about what persons are. In short, if you think that we really just are material organisms and that's really all there is to us, then you've already set the stage for us to mistreat that which is unborn, to mistreat the elderly, to mistreat really anybody that seems to not serve certain purposes in our society. I mentioned earlier, you've got Christian brands of this, but as some of those philosopher theologians will admit, their view does have the difficulty of supporting the unborn given their general view of human persons. And so in the last segment, I mentioned those two families of views, the materialists and then also the substance dualists. Let me mention one more before we move on, because this is the view I would hold, okay? It's actually sort of a hybrid between these two.
The first one, materialist, is nothing but the material world.
Nothing but material.
Nothing supernatural,
that's right.
No spirit.
That's right. And then the substance dualist makes those two claims, body, souls, different kinds of stuff, claim number one. Claim number two, you are the immaterial part of that, the soul only. And in that view, the body is just somewhat arbitrary. You know, you don't necessarily have to have it. I actually hold a view that came about from Aristotle, was modified in the medieval period by Thomas Aquinas. It's a view called hylomorphism. And basically, hyle means in Greek wood or matter. It's material. And then morphe, form. So what we're talking about is material and form. So what is a human person? It is material stuff. And it is also the form. But in this case, what they understood by form was a soul. So in other words, what this view holds is that the human person is actually a composite of both of those, right? A particular kind of material stuff and a very specific set of it. So this is my material, that's your material. And a soul that, as they would say, informs that matter. It shapes it. It structures it. It is – the soul is that by which it is living and is that by which it is human. And so Jamie Dew, on this view, would be the composite of a body and a soul in union. And Steve Noble would be that particular composite of body and soul in union. That's the view called hylomorphism. And so what I would say, as we start to now turn to some of these ethical issues, is that that view, the hylomorphic view of Thomas Aquinas in particular, actually is going to set us to argue, I think, better on the moral fronts and the moral grounds that we need to take a stand on today. Typically, Christians on these battles, especially say like abortion, they're going to hold that substance dualist view, and they're going to say things like, this is really the only view you can hold if you want to defend the unborn. And I'm going to flip that upside down and say, no, I don't think it's the only view you can hold. I actually think it might even be the poorer view that you could hold. And so we could talk about that and flesh that out in any number of detail when we come back.
Yeah, so we'll start – when we come back, we'll start with that, applying these views of what a human person is to abortion. And how can we do it? Why do we do it? And then how do we fight against it? How do you kind of make a case against it? And we'll also talk about the gender. That's a big debate that's all over the place, not going away anytime soon. And if we have time, we'll even look at something like politics and specifically a governmental system like socialism. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Birthday. My buddy Josh Broom just called me Brotato Chip. What is a Brotato Chip? That's Josh Broom, who, if you've been listening to the show for a while, welcome back, by the way. This is Steve Noble. And he said, happy birthday, Brotato Chip. That's a new one on me. But you might remember Josh. Josh has been on the show before. And as a matter of fact, not last year, 2018, but 2017, he shared his testimony at our Call to Worship event. Josh, this is just God's – listen, the power of God's love for mankind is so overwhelming. Yesterday, you had two women that served in the abortion clinics for years, and one of them had been a part of, she estimates, about 20,000 abortions, okay? Hmm. How do you – you're a loving, holy God that judges everything, and yet the blood of that lamb, the blood of Jesus Christ is enough to cover over the complicit – murdering of over 20,000 babies. Okay, so you got that. Both these women love the Lord, both saved, both forgiven, both in the process of healing. Amazing. Josh Broom goes out to L.A. and goes out there, good-looking guy, talented guy to be in the industry, and he ends up in the wrong industry, that being the adult industry, and spends 7 years in that, and then comes back from that, and the guy, Josh, is so in love with Jesus and his wife, and they have a baby boy now. It's just one remarkable redemption story after another, which just overwhelms me with the power of the blood of the Lamb.
Amen.
It's
I've heard you
crazy.
Talk about him. Where's he at now?
He's here in town.
He lives in town.
Yeah, okay. he's wanting to try to come out here. So well, I'll hook him up with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he really wants to be just to spend all his time as a pastor. He's doing a podcast now. It's just awesome. And that's people go, you know, God would never use a person like me. God would never redeem a person like me. God, I'm too broken. I'm too this. I'm too that. I'm like, hey, by the way, what choice does he have?
Here?
Yeah, what choice does God have other than to use broken, messed up people.
That's right.
I'm not good enough. Nobody's good enough.
Yeah,
I'm not qualified enough.
Every person in the Bible, you think about it, murderers, liars, cheaters, you name it. I mean, it's the list goes
right
on
in
and
there.
On. That's right. That's right. Praise
fit right
God
in.
For it.
We're talking to Dr. Jamie Dude today. And for you, those of you on Facebook Live, sorry about that. We had all kinds of technical stuff because it's just me in here today. Evan, my intern, is off being selfish and take care of himself and just throwing me under the bus. But we love him anyway. But we're back on Facebook Live, so if you want to join us there. Since you're looking at your Facebook feed anyway, busted, just go to the Steve Noble Show Facebook page, like it, and then just join us. You can join us right here in the studio. Really interesting, fascinating conversation today with Dr. Jamie Dew, Associate Professor of History of Ideas and Philosophy here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, the Dean of the College at Southeastern, with not one but two PhDs under his belt now, and really kind of identifying what is a human being, body, soul, matter. Are we just materialist? Are we kind of two separate things that sit next to each other? Or are we combined, the material and the spiritual? And then how does that affect how we deal with things like abortion or gender? So how do we then do that? We kind of move from what is a human person to why do we do the things that we do.
That's right. So think about it this way. If you're a materialist and you really are just a material being, and that material being is not fully developed until a certain point of gestation, it does look like you've got this window of time now where you could say that's not a person, abortion would be legal. So you can see kind of there how that particular view of human persons is going to open up this door or at least make it very hard for us to defend the
Mr. Sanger at, I think, Princeton coined the phrase, a dog is a pig, is a rat, is a boy. Meaning there is no material value difference in
That's all of that.
We're more advanced. We took a different turn down the evolutionary road. And so a dog is a pig, is a rat, is a boy. There's really no difference. So killing a quote-unquote human fetus in the womb is no different really qualitatively than stepping on a cockroach.
That's right. If you hold that view, basically what you're saying is that the difference between us and those animals is one of degree, not one of kind, right?
Exactly.
So you're saying we are simply more than those. We're advanced. We're smarter. We're stronger. We're more thoughtful, whatever else. But it's not a difference in kind. It's not like we're a fundamentally different kind of thing, right? So if you hold that view, you've at least opened the door for these types of moral issues, or you've made it hard for yourself to defend the unborn. Now, because of that, what they've done is they've done it by saying it's only material. That's the problem there, right?
Clump of cells.
That's right.
It's not cognizant of itself. It's not self-supporting. Yep. It's just this little whatever it is existing inside
of
a woman.
That's
and because it exists inside of her, it's part of her body. She can do whatever she
wants.
That's
right. If you go the other way, and this is the attempt that a lot of evangelicals are going to make that are pro-life, and this is often thought of as the sort of the pro-life view for this, they'll say, no, it is a human person because it starts at the moment of conception because of the soul. And now this view, remember as I said in the last segment, according to this substance dualist view, the person, there's bodies and souls, different kinds of stuff, but the person is the immaterial part of them. So since that part shows up at the very moment of conception, it is a person from that point forward. Now, so far, so good. That looks like that's really going to position us well to fight these moral battles, right? It's a person at the moment of conception, and so therefore, if you kill it, then you have actually murdered a person. I suggest, though, that there might be a lurking problem there for that view, and it's this. The moment you – so this view does the opposite of what the materialists do. The materialists say it's only material. This view says, well, while there is material stuff, the person is the spiritual stuff. And so by putting the identity of the person solely on the spiritual component and de-emphasizing the material component – I think you've actually made it difficult. You've cut the legs out of the pro-choice and pro-life position. And here's how. Ultimately, when abortion takes place, when those scissors go in the back of a skull, say, and the vacuum starts sucking the brains out and things like that, well, what's it hurting? What's it touching? It's touching the material component of the person, right? It's not actually, per this definition, actually touching the person. So it's actually difficult for me to see on this view how that actually is murder in the first place. So the move that's made there by putting – the move is made to say it is a soul so that they can argue that it's a person from the moment of conception forward. But by putting identity on the spiritual stuff only, they've made it hard for us to defend these physical acts or this physical violence of the scissors and the vacuums and the skulls and things like that. So I think that view actually –
Because the fact that it's a human body and being treated that way does matter.
That's right. That's right. And so I think the problem with this view –
It's egregious on both fronts.
Right. So
not just the spiritual front.
That's right.
The soul side, but also the body side.
That's right. So what they're doing is they're de-emphasizing the physical on this view. Now, the view that I unpacked a moment ago, this hylomorphic view that says, no, you are the composite of both, right? So Jamie Dew is this particular material substance and this particular soul that's involved in it, and it's the union of those two. All right, now on that view, if scissors and vacuum cleaners go into the back of a skull, you actually have murdered a person in this case. Yeah. And so I actually think that this hylomorphic view of Thomas and such is actually going to enable us. Now, Thomas himself didn't hold it quite this way. Thomas himself doesn't actually land where we would want him to stand. But the view itself, I think, has the potential of answering and undergirding these moral intuitions that we have better than does materialism or the substance dualist view.
Well, it that kind of raises the stakes.
Yeah, it makes it possible to say this is actually murder now because you've actually hurt the person. This body is not just a thing I'm in. It's not just a container. It is part of me. So that explains why if you smack me across the head with a frying pan, my personality changes.
Sure.
Or you stab me, I fall over dead. I die. Not just my body dies, but I die in this instant because this is part of who and what I am.
Yeah, and that conversation goes down the road of you look at a tough subject that's unfortunately gotten very popular in the last probably 10 years, which is cutting.
Yeah.
When young women, does it matter? And some people can talk about this like with tattoos, what you do to your body. Does it matter?
Yeah.
Is there inherent worth in the human body in and
of
itself?
Absolutely.
And of course there is.
That's right.
Now, when we talk about the image of God, we're not talking about a physical image. We're talking about the ability to reason, emotion, self-sacrifice, all those things, creativity. Right. That's all God's image. But you don't chuck the body as if it means nothing. Your compatriot and one of my former professors here, Dave Jones, Dr. Jones, when we do a show, we do it usually once a year, where we talk about when you die, should you get buried?
Right.
Or should you be cremated?
Mm-hmm.
And they go, oh, well, who cares? I'm going to get a new body later anyway in the resurrection. Yeah. And the point is, hold on a second. The real issue is, does it mean nothing that you cremate a human body?
Yeah, a lot of people will reject cremation because they'll say, well, in the resurrection, the body's got to come back. And if you cremate it, then it won't be able to come back. I actually think that's not a good reason to reject cremation. I think that, listen, if that's an issue, then we've got the exact same problem when we think of, say, people whose bodies have decomposed by natural stuff and regular decomposition over years, people buried in pine boxes hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So I think that if God can raise them, he can raise cremated people. The problem is that practice seems to de-emphasize the significance of these physical bodies, right? God – and think about it this way. This is what I said to some of my students just this morning. Think about a God that is omnipotent, omniscient, perfectly wise in everything that he does. And oh, by the way, he made you in a body. Is that just accidental? Is that just coincidental? That
he just grabbed something that was on the shelf and available.
Is it like he created you and then leaned over, you know, the Father said to the Son and the Spirit, would you look at that? They came out physical. Didn't see that coming. No. He knew this. He intended this. This is part of his intentional design for us. We don't just possess bodies. Bodies are instrumental to who we are most fundamentally. And so this stuff really does matter. Now, is that an argument for not getting tattoos and stuff like that? I don't know that it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would say whether when you're talking cutting, when you're talking tattoos, when you're – hey, we're going to step on some feet here.
No, we're good.
When you're talking about weight gain, when we talk about cardiovascular health, which I'm guilty of – you know, this stuff matters.
It matters.
This is not just material to be thrown away and disregarded.
Well, didn't Paul, to a certain extent, say, you know, there is some good in taking care of your body?
That's right. That's right.
It doesn't mean nothing.
We need to be a steward of it.
But it doesn't mean everything.
That's right.
So don't worship yourself in a mirror. Right.
That's
right. We're going to come back. We'll switch gears, talk about something really interesting. What about what we're doing with gender? This is Steve Noble with Dr. Jamie Du on Theology Thursday. We'll be right back.
Well, I got a message. I got a song. Can I get a witness? Tell me what's going on.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Theology Thursday, with our friends at Southeastern Baptist, talking to Dr. Jamie Du, who is the Associate Professor of History of Ideas and Philosophy and a Dean of the College at Southeastern. Let me ask this question. I always wonder when it says professor versus associate professor. Take me into your world a little bit.
Okay, so
me understand that.
In America and England do this a little bit differently. They have things like readers and lecturers and then professor. Professor technically is like the highest you can get. You can get senior professor beyond that, which is a little bit more of a prestigious type of thing.
So there's Yoda, then there's Obi-Wan, then
there's Anakin. That's right. So it starts off, actually, before you get your PhD, if you're already teaching, then you're an instructor. Once you get a PhD and you're a professor, you're an assistant professor. Then the next rank is associate professor. Then the next rank is full professor. That's quite a big deal. And then you can get senior or emeritus or distinguished or something like
that. How does one move from associate to full professor?
Generally speaking, through time. Accomplishments. Accomplishments can be in the classroom. Accomplishments can be publishing.
Yeah.
Publishing is a big part of that. So, you know, if you're not publishing or doing things like that, it makes it harder. Not to say that it can't happen, but it makes it harder to do that. So if you are publishing, it makes it a lot easier to move up in the rank.
Makes sense. All right. So we were talking about what is a human person? And then we looked at how that impacts our view on abortion and why that happens and how do we defend it. What about gender? We're in the world now, non-binary, not male and female. Facebook, for example, where we're doing Facebook Live is up to about 78 options on gender.
Wow.
So based on the understanding of mind and body and soul, how did we get here?
You know, first I'd want to say, and I'm happy to talk about that, but I mean, it strikes me as profoundly. Now, the suggestion is that it's arrogant, it's cruel, it's all those things to maintain these traditional categories.
Right.
I'd actually want to flip the script and say to those who are pushing this kind of agenda, well, then you're basically saying that the overwhelming vast majority of the current world population are idiots, that the complete world population of everyone prior to us were idiots and had no idea what they were talking about.
Right.
And so, you know, there's all that. Anyway, so I do think to answer these questions about, you know, what are we most fundamentally? Is it possible for us to do this? How do these questions about human persons speak to gender? Well, I think this way. If you're a materialist and you say that you're just a physical thing, which interestingly, by the way—
Yeah, that should be problematic
it should
on the
be,
gender issue.
But historically speaking, all this whole sexual revolution that starts in the 60s, coming full bloom now with what we're seeing, was actually born out of a materialist movement. Materialists were rejecting the classical views of substance dualism and hylomorphism that we've talked about today. And they started rejecting those things. They thought no to substance dualism, which was kind of the most popular one. And so it was materialism. But wait a minute. If materialism is right. Then I hate to say it, but genitalia is a determining factor on gender and all of those types of things. Your DNA.
And genitalia comes out of your DNA.
That's right. Your DNA, your chromosomes, all those types of things.
All of it.
So you can do things to try to change it. You can have surgeries. You can suppress with chemicals and things like that. But at the end of the day, from stem to stern, from the smallest things in your body to the biggest things in your entire body is wired to be one particular thing. So I actually think that materialism, while they were coming, this movement was born out of materialism. I actually think it's hard to be in this contemporary movements if you're a materialist. I think that they, this whole movement.
Because you have to deny physical reality.
That's right. This whole movement.
Scientific reality.
Is denying the philosophical system they were born out of.
So all of a sudden, they're the science deniers.
That's right. That's exactly right. And so now what they're actually going back to is the view they started off rejecting, which is the substance dualist view. Now, Christians are going to say, a lot of Christian evangelicals are going to hold that substance dualist view, which says, again, body, soul, different kinds of stuff, and that you are the immaterial part of that. And that's where Christians are going to champion. This movement's going to say they're rejecting that. But actually, I think both groups are confused, okay? Because think about it. Take Caitlyn Jenner or Bruce Jenner, all right? Take that whole thing. What is he saying, right? He's saying, I'm not this stuff.
Right.
I'm not the physical stuff.
I'm disassociated from the physical reality.
I'm something non-physical underneath this. Okay, now wait a minute. That's just good old-fashioned substance dualism, which is the view they started off rejecting.
Yeah.
To the Christians that want to fight this moral battle and say substance dualism is our ontology. This is the – ontology is our view of beings, right? This is our view of human beings, substance dualism. I want to say to my evangelical brothers and sisters that hold that view, whoa, wait a minute. You're actually giving them
you're handing over
the ontological system they need to make their case.
Yeah, because they just say there's what my body says.
That's
and then there's what I identify as. That's why
right.
they're to the point now where there's sex is one thing. That's a physical.
Right.
And then gender is another. That's my perception of myself,
right.
Which can change.
Which can change.
I can identify as a woman today, as a man tomorrow, as something else after that.
And I don't want to say, I think there is a degree of sensitivity we need
of
to
course.
Have to some folks. I mean, look, the fact of the matter of is gender dysphoria is what it's called.
Yeah.
It's a very real thing.
It's real.
I mean, so people are, in fact, male or female, but think of themselves in different ways, given their desires and dispositions and things like that. That's real. And I think
– Totally real.
I think there has to be sympathy there for
Absolutely.
Our friends that are that way.
I think we've gotten to the point in evangelicalism where we are sympathetic and have a soft heart towards anxiety, towards depression, towards the realities of that, just like we are towards diabetes or cancer. And in this case, when you have people dealing with gender and gender dysphoria, it's the same thing. It's part of the fallen nature of
mankind. That's right. We can give an account of why it's that way, right? We can explain why you feel sort of a cognitive dissonance from your physicality, right? We can explain that. Now, in terms of, however, which view I think speaks to this the best and enables us to sort of take the moral stand that we want to take,
yeah.
I think it is, again, the view that I've outlined here, this hylomorphic perspective, which says, I am a body and a soul composite. And so why do I think that I'm a guy, that I'm a male? Well, it's at least, I think part of it is a spiritual component, absolutely. But then also there is indeed this physical component of it as well. I have a male organism, right? I have a male body with the DNA, the chromosomes,
right.
All of those things. The physical body that I inhabit is indeed a male body. Same for females and such. So I think that this position actually enables us to take that moral stand in a way better than these other positions that are available to us today.
Yeah, and I think it's so important to remember that. But that's really tricky if we start saying that there's the body and then the spirit of the mind, mm-hmm. and that they're kind of running on parallel tracks. They're not integrated.
That's right.
That all of a sudden we're giving ammunition
to
those who would say, I've got my sex and then I've got my gender.
That's right. That's right. I think if we hold that view, we are giving them the sort of metaphysical, ontological basis for them to make the very claim that we're trying to fight against. And counterproductive.
Yeah, it's really amazing how you have to be careful with this.
Yeah.
We don't generally think in these terms, but we operate this way.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't know what it's like your computer. You don't know anything about the operating system mm-hmm. behind there. Mm-hmm. You just know you open up Word, you go to Safari, you do this and you do that. But the operating system
matters.
That's
right. That's a good analogy of it. There's a philosophical view that's driving all of these issues, whether the person that's doing it is aware of that or not. But, you know, Alexis de Tocqueville said it this way, that Americans in particular are the most influenced by philosophy, even if they're the most ignorant of it. Meaning, you know, we are. It is the wind
that's
in our sails that move us around, even if we're not sure where it's coming from.
Yeah, really powerful. Okay, well, one other thing you mentioned is like socialism.
Yeah.
A governmental political system.
So historically speaking, interestingly, socialism and communism were born out of very materialistic views of human beings. I mean, it was this – I mean, think about Marxism, for example. Marx was adamant. He takes this Hegelian philosophical view that's called the dialect between – he called it the outflowing of the Geist, which is German for spirit, is kind of the best English word to explain it. And Marx liked the system and structure but hated the spiritual component. And so from day one, his system is utterly materialistic. You're going to strip away all the spiritual components, all of the soul components, and just matter. And so these movements, historically speaking, are materialistic to the core. And so what that means is behind these socio-political movements, they start with an anthropology. Again, that's just a fancy word for our view of human beings. Yeah. What are we? If you start off thinking that we really are just material beings, then ultimately, historically, this is where those views have gone. The West has held very different views, as has the East and others, and as has the Christian faith, right? It says that there's more to us than just our physical bodies. There is a soul. There is a spirit. Yes, I do use those interchangeably, but there's more to us than our physical bodies. There's a spiritual component to this as well. And in that—
Well, that's where our founding fathers would say, because we're made in the image of God, we have certain inalienable rights.
That's right. It takes us— That means that I have a certain degree of freedom. I have a certain degree of autonomy. I have a certain degree of choice. And so if I want to labor and toil and I want to invest myself, not my money, my being, my life. I mean, think about what we do when we go to work. I am taking – this is what Locke argues in the Second Treatise on Government. I am taking time away from my wife, my children, my family, right, so that I can give it to this type of stuff. I've invested myself in it. Then for someone to come along after that and say, well, we're going to reappropriate that as we see fit, well, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
You know, so these other movements have been better at. Here's a place where I would say either the hylomorphic view or the substance dualist views probably does a little bit better. If you're a materialist, just note that that's sort of the ontological backdrop of those movements that have taken full bloom in our world and then were defeated and now they're coming back again.
Yeah, well, then that and socialism and communism, it's people as cattle. They don't have any inherent rights because it's all materialist.
That's right.
And then guess who rules that world?
Yeah.
Well, that's the powerful.
That's right.
That's tyranny.
That's
it always leads to tyranny.
Inevitably,
every time it's tried,
there's an elite.
It leads to tyranny. Go look at Venezuela today.
Yeah, that's right. Inevitably, there's an elite class that's going to rule and going to govern and going to have authority, and all the cream goes to the top.
And might makes right.
Yeah, that's right.
And so you don't look at people and go, oh, well, they have a distinct value simply because they're made in God's image.
Yeah.
They have a soul and a spirit. No, it's
materialist.
It's just stuff.
Right. Yeah, I mean, in many ways,
slaughter cattle because we can.
They see us as really sort of in a very evolutionary way.
Absolutely.
Right? We're just a sort of a higher end of all of this. But beyond that, it goes back to what we said earlier. It's a difference in degree. It's not a difference in kind.
Yeah.
And what the Christian faith is saying to us is that, no, when it comes to human beings, there really is something fundamentally different about you and about me than about even beautiful, amazing, profound things like stars and mountains.
Yeah.
You're in the image of God, and I am too, and that's significant.
And what was that? What was the quote about Americans and philosophy?
So he says Americans are the most influenced by philosophy, even if they're the most ignorant of it.
And that's why I think we struggle with that, where that used to be something that we hear young people want to go study philosophy. We kind of write it off.
Yeah.
But again, philosophy is part of the underlying operating system that we see to see how the world works.
That's right.
If you don't understand philosophy, you're going to have a hard time engaging the world.
That's right.
And thus, a lot of people do, unfortunately. Jamie Du, great to have you here.
Thanks, as always, man.
You're very welcome. Okay, guys, thanks for being here. It's great to be with you. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, we'll talk again real soon. And like my dad always said, ever forward. Hey.